Like, it's bad enough we got to watch Don Lemon get drunk every New Year's Eve and do something stupid, right? This is CNN. We're going to have all of our on-air talent get drunk and do stupid things on New Year's Eve, and then we're going to ask you to come back on Monday and take us seriously as journalists. Are you kidding me? Could you imagine a television show where Walter Cronkite and Edward R. Murrow, if your memory goes back that far, are sitting around getting plastered and doing stupid things? Do you think they would have a shred of credibility at the end of that? No, they wouldn't. So here's some advice to CNN. Get rid of Don Lemon. And apparently, I'm not the only one not thrilled with CNN's coverage. This from Yahoo Finance, from Jonathan Bernstein, writing for Bloomberg. Can someone please vote CNN off the stage? Yikes. 10 of the Democrats debated on Tuesday night, but the debate was dominated by Jake Tapper, Dana Bash, and Don Lemon, CNN's moderators. Norm Ornstein got it right. It's not just that the time allocations were harsh. The candidates were constantly being cut off, sometimes after being given all of 15 seconds to make their points. And not just that the time allocation seemed somewhat arbitrary. No, it was the questioning that really fell short. Very, very short. The CNN moderators, again and again, let me remind you that Don Lemon is in the room. Don Lemon is on the stage. And I don't know if they get into the nonsense that happened before the show in this one. Those of you who tuned in at 8 o'clock last night expecting to see the debate instead got some sort of showreel of it's Democrat versus Democrat, an all-out war tonight on CNN. And it's like, what the heck is this? And you got to have the obligatory photos of, you know, all the candidates out on the campaign trail. You know, the action shot, the sleeves rolled up and the microphone in their hand, and they're gesturing powerfully towards somebody. So we got 10 minutes of that, and then they run some commercials. And then they come back, and here comes the color guard. And we're going to sing the national anthem. And then the color guard walks out of the room. And then Don Lemon throws it back to commercial. And then we get opening statements from all 10 candidates, who, incidentally, they brought out and introduced one by one in one of the most awkward things I've ever seen, because by the time you get to the fifth candidate, nobody's running across the stage to shake hands. We'll be here all night. They didn't actually start asking any questions until 8:23. And then what should have been a two-hour debate that let us all go do something enjoyable at 10 o'clock drags on until almost 10:30 at night. What are you doing, CNN? What is this? This isn't American Gladiators. Okay? This is that miniature golf show over on ABC with Rob Riggle that you should watch. I forget the name of that show. This isn't the NFL on Tuesday night. And we got to have a breakdown of, you know, telling us the stories behind these two teams. It's a presidential debate. We are supposed to be giving the candidates an opportunity to tell us who they are and what they stand for. And gosh darn it, if Amy Klobuchar did not do that every single time the camera turned on her, hey, I win every election that I'm in. Hey, I did this. I did this. Same thing with the guy from Colorado. Hickenlooper? Is Hickenlooper the former Colorado governor? You know, in Colorado, I did this. In Colorado, I did this. In Colorado, I did this. If you can't, Elizabeth Warren was pretty bad, too. If you can't get off your talking points, you don't deserve to be on that stage. The point of a debate is not to recite your talking points over and over and over again. Although, you know what? For Beto O'Rourke, that at least would have been a strategy instead of standing there and smiling, which is pretty much all he did last night. The CNN moderators, again, I'm going back to Bloomberg. The CNN moderators again and again employed the very worst types of questions. One style that Tapper used repeatedly early on was interrupting to insist that the candidates stick to a portion of a topic that he found interesting, such as whether their health care plans would involve increases in taxes for the middle class, rather than what they wanted to talk about. The night also featured too many gotcha questions in which a candidate is challenged about something they said. But even worse was a constant theme of asking one candidate to fight with another. Candidate X, what do you think of Candidate Y's plan? And there was a fair amount of this. You know, there was one where Elizabeth Warren had said, you know, if you're not going to fight for universal health care, or if you're not behind universal health care, you're not a leader, you're not fighting hard enough, whatever she said. And they're asking all the candidates this, and they're basically saying, hey, I'm paraphrasing here. It would have been much more entertaining if this is what was said, but this is the gist of what was said. Hey, Amy Klobuchar, Elizabeth Warren says you're a coward. What's your reaction to that? Hey, John Hickenlooper, Elizabeth Warren says you're a coward. What's your reaction to that? And they got Warren and Bernie Sanders in the middle of the stage with all the moderates on either side of them, hoping to get these fights. This is entirely choreographed. CNN can run their draft lottery. They ran a draft lottery for this, CNN did, where they pulled out the names of who was going to be in which debate. Are you kidding me? You're going to tell me this wasn't a setup from the very beginning? I don't buy it. Don't buy a ticket in that lottery. I think that lottery is rigged. I challenge CNN to prove otherwise. So this is what you got. You got 1 minute to answer. You got 30 seconds to respond, and then you got 15 seconds to respond to a response. 15 seconds. I'm in broadcasting, all right? I understand time and what can and can't be done in a unit of time better than most people. Because when you're in broadcasting, you discover how long a minute really is. You also discover how short 30 seconds really is. 15 seconds is not enough time in a debate situation to get your thoughts together, let alone come up with a cohesive answer. So this debate was a horror show. It was a mess. I expect tonight is going to be a mess as well. If you feel the need to click off, fine. But I'll tell you right now, they got their pregame fight reel that they got to run. A couple of commercial breaks. The color guard's going to come in. They're going to sing the national anthem. They're not even starting for another 20 minutes. So you can hang here for another 20 minutes and get my debate preview, I guess, is what this amounts to. So I don't want to get too much into the candidates because, as I've said, most of these candidates don't matter. You're not going to hear from some of them ever again after last night. Same thing with the group that's up there tonight. Some of these people you're never going to hear from again. And in all fairness to CNN, this whole presidential race on the Democratic side right now is a complete poop show. I think the FCC will let me get away with saying that. It's a poop show. 20 candidates. That's not even all the candidates. There are more. There are more than 20 people running as Democrats for the president of the United States. Now, I know we live in a country where anybody has the right to run for president. But it seems to me that at some point, the Democratic National Committee wants to sit down and look at the election calendar and say to themselves, how many candidates can we realistically support? 1 year out from the election, 6 years out from the election, or 6 months out from the election, 3 months out from the election. You got to have numbers in there. And you got to have some kind of a vetting process. So that you're not tormenting viewers with two nights of Don Lemon on CNN. I mean, honestly, you're losing votes because Don Lemon is in these debates. If Donald Trump wins re-election, Don Lemon is going to be a big part of the reason why. He may not be the only reason why, but he will be a big part of the reason why. So is anything of any value said last night? Depends on who you talk to. I keep reading today that Senator Elizabeth Warren won the debate. That's what they're saying, because she shouts louder than everybody else. I will say this. Out of the people who are on that stage, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren command the camera and command the audience better than everybody else, with the possible exception of Marianne Williamson, who is a poet thrown into a ring full of pit bulls. She actually got more attention during the debate last night because they let her talk. They didn't really let her talk in the first one. They let her talk last night. And she comes on basically as the conscience of the Democratic Party. Most of her responses were basically, what do we represent? What do we stand for? What are we about? And she had answers to that. And they were very eloquent answers. She is incredibly well-spoken. She's not a politician. And, you know, she's chum for the Sharks in this case. But everybody liked her. So everybody's saying Elizabeth Warren won. I don't know how many of you remember this. Maybe you've come across this. But many, many years ago, I first remember hearing about this in the mid-1990s. There was a classification done of bad managers and bad manager styles. And one of them was known as the seagull. And as near as I can tell, Elizabeth Warren is the seagull. You may have worked for Seagull. This is what the Seagull manager type is. Like its namesake, this is from HRZone.com. Like its namesake, it can be a nuisance and cause damage to its natural environment. Flapping its wings in exasperation of another missed deadline and defecating openly is a sign that all is not well and an appraisal is approaching. That's pretty much the seagull bosses tend to fly into situations without knowing the background, swoop into the office, and squawk out orders, which often ruffle a few feathers. Yep. Sound like Elizabeth Warren to you? Sounds like Elizabeth Warren to me. And the problem is, people who do this, people who walk in and squawk and wave their arms around, are taken seriously by all the people who are too timid to do that. They walk in and they scream and yell. Everybody's like, well, that person's making a lot of noise. They must know what's going on. When you start to listen to what they're saying, you realize they don't know what's going on. And for me, the most important thing that came out of the debate last night, there were a couple of things that are worth discussing that need to be part of the bigger conversation among Democrats in choosing who your leader is going to be. Elizabeth Warren has put forward an idea that was rejected by the Obama administration because there were sane people in the Obama administration. That the United States would issue a global pledge never to be the first to use a nuclear weapon. We would issue a statement to the world, Elizabeth Warren said last night, that we will never be the first to use a nuclear weapon. In other words, we will never use a nuclear weapon offensively. We will only use one defensively. I'm assuming is what that means. Governor Steve Bullock of Montana called her out on that, as well he should have. Because, and this is my opinion, okay? You may feel differently about this. Elizabeth Warren says this is going to make the world safer. And this is where I will say that Elizabeth Warren is a dangerously naive person who may be unfit to be in the Oval Office. Because if you were going to tell the world, hi, United States, only country in the world that's ever used a nuke, yeah, we're not going to do that anymore. We're never going to use a nuclear weapon offensively. You don't have to worry about us. It will be utter carnage on the face of this planet. And this came about as part of a broader conversation of whether or not the United States should be the world's police force. Guess what? If you're going to be a superpower, and we seem to enjoy our superpower status, we certainly like having the reserve currency for the planet and the economic advantages that gives us. If you're going to be a superpower, you're going to be the world police. The one goes with the other. You can't claim to be a superpower if you're not the world police. You see, you think Germany's, if we step down and say, you know what, no, we're not getting involved anymore. We step down and do all that, you think Germany's going to pick up the mail and be like, ah, we are the world police now? No. You think France is going to do it? No. Switzerland, they're not going to do it. Japan, they don't have the means to do it. We are a superpower, which means anytime there is a problem somewhere in the world, we have to go stick our beak in. We may not want to. We may not like it. But if you're going to be a superpower, if you're going to have the world's largest arsenal of nuclear weapons, you'd better expect that everybody else on the planet is going to view you and what they can get away with in light of that. And if you're sitting on the world's largest stockpile of nuclear weapons and you say, we're never going to use them. We promise. We'll never fire them first. Everybody else in the world is going to be like, all right, free lunch. India and Pakistan will be involved in a full-on nuclear exchange within 30 days of Elizabeth Warren announcing that policy. Because there's no consequences for them. There'll be half a dozen Muslim nations trying to blow up Israel. Because there's no consequences for them. North Korea is going to be shooting nukes at South Korea. Because there's no... We're not going to use a nuclear weapon. As long as you don't fire them at the United States, have fun. The world is safer, Elizabeth Warren says. Please. The Obama administration rejected this policy for this exact reason. President Obama's Secretary of Defense and his intelligence officials said, you can't do that. If we say we're not going to use nuclear weapons, everyone else will. Because that's the one thing that's keeping everybody in line right now. Here comes Elizabeth Warren. I'm going to make the world safer. We're not going to use nuclear weapons. I will issue a pledge. We will promise to the world not to use nukes. Give me a break. Dangerously naive. Dangerously naive. And that's sort of the tip of the iceberg with what you get from some of these candidates. Tim Ryan got in some good shots on Bernie Sanders about Medicare for All. And he brought it up in a context that I hadn't thought about, which is Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All program basically says you don't get to keep your private plan anymore. Your insurance is gone. Government runs this now. And we can have that conversation, and I think we need to have that conversation about whether or not we are better off with private insurance and co-payments and all the out-of-pocket expenses that go along with that. Because when you have private insurance, whether it's an employer-sponsored plan, unless you're getting a full ride on health insurance somewhere, if so, please tell me where you work because of like a job there. You pay a lot more for your health insurance than you realize in the average year. Because in addition to your co-payments, in addition to your out-of-pocket costs, which are probably capped somewhere between $3,000 if you're an individual, $7,000, $8,000 if you're a family, there's also that money they pull out of your paycheck every month for your premiums. So what Bernie Sanders and Medicare for All is proposing is the government, not private insurance companies, are going to pull that money out of your paycheck every month for premiums, and you're never going to pay another dime. You don't pay for prescriptions. You don't pay to go to the hospital. You don't pay to see the doctor. You don't pay for your shots. You don't pay for x-rays. You don't pay for lab tests. Everything is paid for. And the argument that Bernie Sanders makes and Elizabeth Warren makes and other candidates make is that this will save the average American money. I happen to believe that this is true. I think we would come out ahead if we had a national healthcare system similar to what they have in Canada, similar to what they have in the United Kingdom. And if the 1% want to go out and buy their own health insurance to go get some fancy care at some fancy hospital that none of the rest of us can get into, as long as the quality of care everybody else gets is good and decent, I'm fine with that. Right? You want your little Cadillac plan where, you know, you get private nurses coming by every 5 minutes and refilling your lime Ricky or your mint julep while you're lying in the hospital recovering from your appendix surgery. Fine, go for it. I have no issue with you doing that. It's your money. The question is, how do we insure uninsured Americans? And how do we make health care affordable again? Which is really, that's the message that should be on the hat. Should be, make health care affordable again. Not make America great again. Make healthcare affordable again. Because years and years ago, I got to go back a ways, years ago, but within my lifetime, so within the last 50 years, healthcare was way more affordable than it is today. You could go and pay out of pocket for your medical costs, and it wouldn't bankrupt you. But now we have the insurance health provider game where, well, we only cover 80% of this, so it gets marked up for anybody who's paying cash. It's predatory. It's unfair. And when I, believe me when I say, as somebody who has exposure to this industry, who works in this industry, the insurance companies are the only ones making money. The doctors aren't making money. The hospitals aren't making money. The insurance companies are making money. And if you can take that out of this, if you can get the insurance companies and their profit motive out of this, then yes, you can make healthcare more affordable in this country. And I do believe that a government system, a Medicare for all system, and I've advocated for this on this show before, I do believe that it would save the average family money. If you were a middle class family, if you're an upper middle class family, certainly if you're a lower middle class family that can't really afford health insurance right now and is paying out of pocket because you can't afford health insurance, or is going without because you can't afford health insurance, you're going to come out ahead in a system like this. The question becomes the quality of care. And that's a big question. That is an open question. And when you start looking into the ways that this has been handled in other parts of the world, I like to use the United Kingdom as an example. If you're 65 and you want a hip replacement, you don't just go to the doctor and say, I want a hip replacement. You have to first go to an insurance board that is going to decide whether or not you are worthy of a hip replacement. If you are still a productive member of society and you're employed and all the rest of that, you're going to get your hip replacement. If you're retired, go kick rocks. Go pay for your own hip replacement. Because our insurance program is set up to take care of the people who contribute to society, not the people who are living on benefits provided by society. There is a question of whether or not you would get end-of-life care, of whether or not you would get certain cancer treatments available to you. This is life-saving operations. This came up during the Obamacare debate when the Republicans started talking about death panels. Okay? Death panels are a real thing. If you're going to try and manage costs in a healthcare system for every man, woman, and child in the United States of America, there may be things that just don't get covered anymore or don't get covered for certain people. And that's the trade-off that you have to make to keep this thing from just sucking up all of the U.S. GDP. What do you do about people with chronic illnesses who have ongoing medical needs? How do we afford that? These are difficult questions. And they're questions that go way beyond whether or not you get to keep your private insurance. But the thing that I liked about what Tim Ryan said last night was he put it in the context of union employees. And he said, you look at some of these union employees, and they're in Detroit. Detroit is a big union town. It's where the auto workers' unions are. And he brought up the point that unions, in some cases, have given up money, pay, cost of living increases and things like that to continue getting really excellent health care. So they're making less money than they possibly could be, but they got really good health care. Well, now the government's going to come in and take that away from you. Now, Bernie says under those circumstances, you're going to have more money. You're going to have more cash in your pocket, and you're going to pay less for health care, and that should be a good thing. What Tim Ryan is saying in a roundabout but accurate way basically is everything the government touches turns to crap. Why are we going to let the government mismanage healthcare the way it mismanages everything else? That's a legitimate question. And this is a debate that as individuals, as Americans, as voters, we need to have. And it should not be driven by these candidates. It should be driven by the people. We collectively should be sitting down and saying, how do we fix the healthcare problem? Instead, we look to these elected officials and say, well, who's going to fix it? None of them are. None of them are. I said earlier tonight, talking about the registry and the 7 motorcyclists that died in New Hampshire, that that's your fault if you live in Massachusetts, and that it's my fault, that we are responsible for those deaths because we do not demand accountability from our state agencies. Same thing with healthcare. We all sit around and say, we want someone to do something about healthcare. All the candidates sit around and they say, well, this is my plan, and this is my plan, and this is my plan. That's when the voters need to say, we don't want to hear your plan. We're going to tell you what we want. We want Medicare for all. Or we want Medicare for all with private health insurance available on top of it. Or we want things to stay the way they are and let the poor people go kick rocks. That's what we need to do. We can't let candidates sit there and tell us the way it's going to be. They work for us, not the other way around. And the American people seem to have forgotten this. If I could point to one sea change that has taken place in my lifetime, and in particular in the last 20 years, the relationship between the politicians and the people has become entirely inverted. We are now accountable to them in the minds of too many voters. That is not how this works. They are accountable to us. We are the power in this country. Not Democrats, not Republicans, not progressives, not socialists, not the alt-right, not anybody. The people. And a lot of what is going on out there, a lot of what is being said right now, a lot of what you're going to hear in these debates in the coming months is about dividing us. It's about taking what might be a block of Americans that comes together. I think something like 60 to 63% support a single-payer system in this country now. It's almost two-thirds of the country wants single-payer. But if they can divide us up, they can say, well, wait, you want a public option, or you want private insurance, and you want Medicare phased in over time, or you want everything thrown out, blow it up, and just give us Medicare. The more that they can divide us, the more that they can ignore what we want. Part of the problem here is we don't know what we want. And we don't know what we want because we don't have legitimate news organizations to bring us information. Instead of getting a debate, we get Don Lemon. Shameful. CNN, really, take it off the air. Replace it with music videos. Go back to headline news 24 hours a day. Can we please, please, somebody find a way to get Don Lemon off the air? And don't let him within 1,000 miles of another presidential debate. The guy doesn't belong there. The guy's great. Getting drunk and getting piercings on New Year's Eve. All right? That's Don Lemon's skill set. Let him live over there. Let him stay over there. The rest of us would like to hear where these candidates stand on the issues. And that really was the only issue last night where they actually came out. Bernie, Elizabeth, they want to blow it up. Single payer, Medicare for all, boom. Some of them want to keep things the way they are. Some of them want to phase in. We're gonna create a Medicare option and put it on the exchanges with all of the other health insurance. And because it's cheaper and better, it's going to beat everything else out. Kaiser Permanente actually supports that idea. Okay, fine. Give it a shot. I don't know that you can blow the whole thing up. And as I said, I believe that Tim Ryan brought up a really good point that people hadn't thought about last night when he said, you realize that insurance that you fought for, if you're a union worker, is going to be made illegal by the United States government. Bernie Sanders will ban private health insurance. That's the sort of thing that makes people stop in their tracks. There was another question that came up last night where, again, CNN just falls flat on its face because it doesn't have the right people asking these questions. Jake Tapper's usually pretty good, but he pooched this one, where they were asking the candidates whether or not entering the United States should be decriminalized. Now, this is a pretty thorny issue in the immigration debate. And my problem with CNN is I don't think most people at home understand what's being said when this question is asked. Okay? When you think about illegal immigration, you think about people who shouldn't be in the United States. And you may ask yourself, why aren't these people removed? Well, if they get caught, they are. That's one crime that you commit if you were in this country without an invitation. Okay? If you don't have a visa, if you don't have a green card, if you don't have citizenship status, if you don't have a reason to be here, You've just shown up and you're like, hi, I'm going to be an American now. You can't do that. That is a crime. Being in this country without authorization is illegal. What CNN was talking about is a different crime. And that is the crime of simply walking across the border. It is illegal and criminal to cross the border of the United States. Most Americans don't know this. This is where our current border crisis comes from. Because beginning with the Obama administration, enforcement of that section of the U.S. criminal code began, where they said, if you simply walk across the United States border and you are an alien, you have broken the law and we are going to throw you in jail and we're going to separate you from your children and all the rest of this. That one little piece is what has led to our crisis on the border, because we have a zero tolerance policy in place, courtesy of the Trump administration. So we have to arrest everybody. We got to put them all in detention centers. We don't have enough room for everybody. It takes 45 days to process an asylum claim. Legally, we can only hold some of these people for 15 days. But we're still rounding everybody up, throwing them in these detention centers, flying them all over the country, dumping them out on the street, busing them to some place in the middle of nowhere when the time that we can hold them runs out. So the question that's being asked is, can we just let people walk in? Can we decriminalize the act of walking across the border? And I say, yes, we can. And I say, yes, we should. Okay. I don't say this as somebody who is soft on immigration policy. I don't say this as somebody who says, open borders, let everybody come in here. No. But I say this as a way of dealing with the crisis that we have on our southern border right now. We cannot handle the number of people trying to get into this country. No country on earth could handle this. Keep in mind, in terms of resources, in terms of money, government size, sheer number of people, the amount of food that we have, the amount of land we have, the amount of water that we have, the amount of natural resources we have, we are better prepared than any nation on earth to deal with 100,000 refugees coming in a month. And we can't do it. Because it's simply too many people. And the one thing that we've proven doesn't work is throwing everyone in detention centers. That is not working at all. If you decriminalize the act of walking into the country, then you can't just grab everyone at the border and throw them in detention centers. It's not going to be any more or less chaotic than it is right now. Because ultimately, those people spend time in detention centers, and then they wind up in our communities anyway. Sooner or later, the government has to let them go. So we would do well to decriminalize that and take that step away so that we're not housing all of these people in unfair, I won't say unfit conditions. I haven't been there to see it for myself. I'd like to imagine, that our federal agencies are doing the best they possibly can, given the circumstances. But if you decriminalize the act of walking into the country, you lose your reason to just grab people and throw them in a detention center. And that may be the right move at this point in time. It won't necessarily increase or decrease the number of migrants who come here. But it will eliminate the bottleneck that we have at the border right now. And that may be a good idea. But CNN doesn't think far enough to present that as the question. All they say is, well, you know, you said you'd decriminalize illegal entry into the United States. Or Candidate X says they'd decriminalize entry into the United States. Are they wrong? And the audience is sitting there going, what are you even talking about? What is it? Wait. Are they saying just let the illegals in? That's what people are thinking. And no one is saying that. No one's saying just let the illegals in. You can still grab people and say, hey, are you supposed to be here? Are you in this country legally? And arrest them. The difference being you have people getting arrested in small numbers all over the country rather than by the thousands in a handful of border crossings, which will ultimately lead to faster, more humane treatment for everybody. CNN can't figure out how to put that. This is an important question, and it's a question that as voters, we need to make up our minds. We need to sit down and we need to say, we want this. This is what immigration reform should be. And rather than the candidates sitting there and saying, hey, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, we're sitting there saying, are you going to do this? And if you're going to do anything other than this, I'm not going to vote for you. We should be telling the candidates what their platform will be, not the other way around. And if you want our democracy to function again, if you want our country to function again, we have to get back into that mindset where when candidates walk in with ridiculous pie-in-the-sky ideas, like we're going to guarantee everybody a union job, or we're going to pay reparations to every black American for slavery, or we're going to pay off everybody's student loan debt, the American people sit there and they say, nobody asked for this. We don't want that. You are not going to do that. And we just boo them off the stage. And we sit down and we say, these are our priorities. We want you to do something about the climate. We want you to do something about healthcare. We want you to do something about these endless wars that we're fighting. We want you to do something about immigration. What do you got? Oh, and by the way, we have decided that we want this solution. Are you going to implement that? Yes or no? You go to the next candidate. Are you going to implement that? Yes or no? And at that point, the candidates can come in and say, look, we can do what you want, or we can do it this way, which may be better. That's how they used to campaign. Candidates used to say, they used to sit down and they would say, what matters to the American people? And they'd look at all the polling and they'd say, these are the issues. This is what matters. This is what I need to run on. We're seeing something very different now, where Elizabeth Warren is campaigning on the idea that I'm going to pay everybody's college loan debt. No, you're not. No, you're not. Not in a million years. If you ever got the $1 trillion that you would need to do that, and you handed it out to millennials to pay off their college debt, there would be a civil war in this country. All right? Generation X and Generation Z would murder the millennials and take the money away from them. And by the way, Senator Warren, just a question. If the world is going to end in 12 years, Beto O'Rourke said 10 last night. The world is going to end in 10 years because of climate change, and you have $1 trillion. Why aren't you doing something about that? If the world's going to end in 10 years, who gives a flying hoot if anybody's college debt has been paid off? What difference does it make? If the world's going to end in 10 years, we should all just stop paying our debts entirely. Get drunk, have a good time. It's all over in a decade. What's the priority here? Either you don't believe in what you're telling us about climate change, or you have some crazy notion that we'll all die happier in 10 years if people's college debts are paid off. Please stop. Please stop. It is WMFO Medford. This is the second week in a row that I have to note a sad passing. Last week, it was Rutger Hauer, who appeared in Blade Runner. And was appeared in a lot of different things, but better known for Blade Runner. Over the weekend, we lost somebody whose voice has been a part of your life if you have watched any television or movies in the United States for the last 30 plus years. I remember first hearing her voice in the early 1980s when the Strawberry Shortcake specials were airing around Easter. And since then, she has gone on to play a lot of legendary characters. Her name was Russi Taylor. She was one of the foremost voice actresses. I think we're supposed to say voice actors now, but voice actors, voice actresses in Hollywood, a Disney legend. And here are just a few of the characters that she brought to life during her career.
Oh, I'll take the greatest care of you and nurse you till you're quite better and happy again. There, just as handsome as ever. Oh, if only you were real, I could dance with you.
Can you let me have it for $40?
$40? Forget it. You made me give up my spoon for that.
It's all I've got. I sold seeds. I visited my aunt in the nursing home. I fished a dime out of the sewer, for God's sake.
Oh, Mickey Mouse, would you be my date at the luau?
Your date? Oh, boy, you betcha. But I thought you said I was a pig.
Oh, you're not the pig. He is.
This is a big chance to prove what great business ducks we can be. At the Duck Enterprises? Sure, what could go wrong? Yeah, we have the business idea of the century.
Well?
Boys, the future is... milkshakes!
Hey, where are my pajamas? Gee, I guess he can't find his pajamas either.
I say abstract.
And I say abstract.
I say compact.
I say compact.
I say contract.
And I say contract.
Who cares how you pronounce it? We might as well announce it. Forever we're together. We're stuck. Even though I'm a mouse.
And I am a duck. I'm a duck.
Russie Taylor. Now, passed away at the age of 74, 75. One of those voices that you've been hearing your entire life. She will be sadly, sadly missed. She was the voice of Minnie Mouse for the last 30 years. She was the voice of Martin Prince and Sherry and Terry on The Simpsons. She was the voice of Baby Gonzo. She was the voice of Strawberry Shortcake. She was the voice of so many characters that, as I said, she has been a part of your life for the last 30-plus years. And... thank you, Russie, for your contributions. At some point, she has probably made you smile. In world news, I don't normally go too heavy on environmental issues. For my own self and in my own life, do everything that I can to try and live with as light an impact as possible. Okay. Yes, I own a car. I own a very, very high mileage car. Okay. I could have bought any car that I wanted. I bought a Ford Fiesta because it gets 30 miles to the gallon, and we'll probably buy an electric car when the Ford Fiesta has outlived its usefulness. I turn the water off while I'm brushing my teeth. I take short showers. I recycle. I do the things that I turn lights off when I leave the house and don't leave the air conditioning on when I'm not home. I turn computers off when I'm not at work or when I'm not using them at home. Yes, I actually turn off the vampire devices, which most people don't do. I do all of this because these are small things that I can do to make things a little bit better, to make this the resources we have last a little bit longer. And that little bit that everyone can do, I think, is very important. You know, when I start hearing things like, we're going to get rid of the jets and we're going to replace them with trains. Number one, no, you're not, because trains don't work on the Pacific Ocean. Number two, that doesn't do you any good if everybody is walking around with a personal air conditioner. Or everybody's walking around wasting water. There are a lot of issues that we face. One of the big ones is plastics. And a lot of communities now have gone to bans on plastic bags. And I will tell you, I fully and wholeheartedly support every plastic bag ban, every straw ban, every other single-use plastic ban that is going on out there. And this story is a reason why. This is from Agence France-Presse. Plastic junk spawns desert island disaster in Pacific. Floating plastic garbage has swamped a remote Pacific island once regarded as an environmental jewel, and scientists say little can be done to save it while a throwaway culture persists. Henderson Island is an uninhabited coral atoll that lies almost exactly halfway between New Zealand and Peru, with 5,500 kilometers, 3,400 miles, of ocean in either direction. Despite its extreme isolation, a freak confluence of geography and ocean currents means Henderson has one of the highest concentrations of plastic pollution on the planet. Quote, "We found debris from just about everywhere," said Jennifer Lovers, an Australian-based researcher who led an expedition to the island last month. "We had bottles and containers, all kinds of fishing stuff, and it had come from, well, you name it. Germany, Canada, the United States, Chile, Argentina, Ecuador. It was a real message that every country has a responsibility to protect the environment, even in these remote areas." Henderson lies at the center of the South Pacific Gyre, a vast circular ocean current that runs counterclockwise down the east coast of Australia and up the west coast of South America. The gyre should be a boon for the 10-kilometer by 5 speck of land, carrying rich nutrients into the waters surrounding Henderson to feed huge colonies of seabirds. The atoll's ecosystem is so rich that Henderson was included on the UN World Heritage List in 1988, with the body hailing it as an untouched paradise. Quote, as one of the last near-pristine limestone islands of significant size in the world, Henderson Island remains its exceptional natural beauty with its white sandy beaches, limestone cliffs, and rich and almost undisturbed vegetation, the UN World Heritage List said. But 3 decades later, the gyre has become a marine conveyor belt, dumping endless waves of plastic detritus onto Henderson's coast, making it the hub of what has become known as the South Pacific Garbage Patch. Lavers led her first expedition there in 2015, and on the island's east beach found there were about 700 items of plastic per square meter. 700 items of plastic per square meter. That's a square yard, just about. One of the highest concentrations found anywhere in the world. Compounding the problem, it's about the size of an ottoman. Compounding the problem, the churning waves have reduced more than half the waste into tiny particles, almost invisible to the human eye, making them impossible to clean up, but easily digested. They get the language wrong here. But easily digested by wildlife such as birds and turtles. Here is what's happening. This is why this issue matters to me. All this plastic that we're throwing away that winds up in the ocean gets turned into little pellets, little balls, little pieces. Fish eat the little pieces as they're eating everything else because the way fish eat, they open their mouth, they swallow. Some stuff stays, some stuff goes. These little pieces of plastic lodge in the fish's stomachs. Birds then eat the fish, and birds feed the fish that they eat to their young. These little pieces of plastic, and in some cases, large pieces of plastic, lodge in the stomachs of the birds. Baby birds are starving to death because their stomachs are full of plastic. There's no room left for them to digest anything. There's no room left for them to eat anything. And they starve to death because their stomachs are full of plastic. Now, of all the things that we do to mess up this world, a lot of them are necessary evils, okay? We must mine coal. We must burn oil. We must chop down trees. We must build highways. We must have power plants. Because we would die otherwise. We wouldn't have nice things like radio if we didn't have those things. Those are necessary evils that keep us alive. Single-use plastic, almost universally, can be done away with. We don't need it. We have other materials that we can use. Why do we have to have bottled water? Why can't it be in a can? Okay. Metal will biodegrade eventually and break down into very small components. Plastic doesn't do that. And plastic is killing marine life at unprecedented levels. We are going to see extinctions of these creatures if we don't stop filling our oceans with needless, wasteful plastic. We can start with the bags. We can start with the straws. And we can start with plastic utensils. All that stuff can go. There are natural materials that we can use in place of those materials that work just as well. Canned water have the same ring to it as bottled water? No, but who cares? Either way, you're getting a cold, refreshing beverage. Some of us will tell you, holding that cold aluminum can on a hot day is way better than holding the plastic. Some of us even believe that it keeps the drink colder, or makes it taste better, or what have you. This is a crisis. And there are environmentalists all over the world sounding the alarm about what is happening in the Pacific Ocean. And what is happening in the Pacific Ocean is happening on a similar scale throughout our world, all of our beaches. Now, in the case of this particular beach, their location, the fact that this gyre that is constantly, think of it like a whirlpool, okay? This, the Pacific gyre is basically pulling everything off the coast and pulling it inward, where it finally lands on the coast of this island. a lot of the plastic that shows up there is things like fishing buoys and fishing line and various fishing debris. Not a problem for the most part, because birds aren't going to eat that. But when it starts getting ground up into little tiny pieces, then it becomes a problem. We need to reevaluate our relationship with plastic. Not just for the damage that we're doing to the oceans, though that should be reason enough. The fact that we are killing marine life ought to be enough. Because it is not worth it to have species of birds go extinct so that you can have a plastic bag to take your stuff home from the supermarket. I'm sorry. That should not be an acceptable trade-off for anyone. And I'm fairly confident in saying that is not an acceptable trade-off for anyone. Most people simply aren't aware that this is going on. Because the environmentalists can barely compete. And look, I'm no big fan of the environmentalists, okay? I don't like hippies. It's well known. I don't like hippies. I want you to go see Quentin Tarantino's new film. Because he gives the hippies what for. And there may be an allegory in there to something that's going on today. Get to that in a moment. I got no love for the people who are like, oh, you can't ever cut down a tree, man. Look, we got to cut down some trees, okay? We got to burn coal. I wish we didn't have to. But we can't have tens of thousands of people freeze to death. So we got to burn coal. We got to burn oil. And we got to find ways that we don't need to do that anymore. Hey, maybe we ought to put up some nuclear plants. Best energy source that we have right now. Wind up with a lot of waste, it's going to be a problem. But if we're kicking the can down the road anyway, 20, 30, 40 years of nuclear power will get us to the next age of whatever. Plastics is something that we can fix right now. And it's something that you can fix. You walk into any city or town around here. You walk into the mayor's office, you walk into the town administrator's office and say, I want a plastic bag ban, I want a plastic bottle ban, single-use plastic ban, they're going to say, fine. Everybody is on board with this right now. All you have to do is ask, but you have to ask. And you have to be accountable yourself. You have to look at what you use in your life and say, where are the single-use plastics? How can we get rid of these? I am sorry to admit, I like Keurig coffee. And I have no problem with K-cups. K-cups are a big part of the problem. That's where a lot of the plastic is going right now. And I wish that company would do something about it. Maybe I need to stop. The point, I'm not giving them my business because the coffee is bought from my office and it's there. Do I buy K-cups on my own? No, I don't. Would I? No. Because it's the worst kind of single-use plastic. We have to do something about this. 855-915-9636 on the Tom Mikey D is coming your way in just a minute. As I said, you should go see Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I was thrilled. I almost let out a little yelp during the movie. Because those of you who have listened to this show for a long time, particularly the Thanksgiving show, know that there's a bunch of old commercials that I like to play. And I was beyond thrilled to hear one of those commercials pop up pretty early on in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So that tells me that Quentin and I are frequenting the same online catalogs of old commercials and old material. But it was just a real thrill for me to hear this because it is one of my favorite old radio commercials. And if you go to see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which I highly recommend, by the way. Try not to learn anything about it before you go in and see it. Go in and see it with no spoilers. Just go in, think it as what you think it is, and you will love it. And while you're watching it, keep your ears open, and you will hear this play over one of the car radios early in the film. This is WMFO Medford.
Heaven Scent Fragrance by Helena Rubinstein. Spray it on and heavenly things happen. Heaven Scent. Splash in it. Laugh in it. Live in it. Love in it. You'll find Heaven Scent Fragrance at Helena Rubinstein counters everywhere.
Everybody, Jamie Lee Curtis here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. What should you do to stop a friend from driving if they've been drinking? Answer, whatever it takes. Think before you drink. Designate before you celebrate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary with you for about another 4 minutes. And then On the Town with Mikey D will be here with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. Time now for What's Hot, my favorite thing from the past week. There was in Wakefield, this great little hole-in-the-wall barbecue place run by a genuine guy from the South called The Porch. And I used to go eat there all the time because he had outstanding barbecue. Well, he shut the place down and announced that he was going to move to a new location. That new location opened a week ago Monday. And I had the good fortune to be there last Thursday night. It is called the Porch Southern Fair and Juke Joint. ThePorchSouthern.com, www.theporchsouthern.com. He has moved to a new location right near Wellington Station. And it's a big indoor space with a nice bar, great seating. It's got a stage, so they got live music coming in. And they're open daily from 5 p.m. to 11 p.m., 175 Rivers Edge Drive, Medford, Mass. The food is even better than it was when he was in Wakefield. If you remember the old menu, everything's still there. You're still going to find the Banty. You're still going to find the meatloaf sandwich. But there's all kinds of new entrees and new appetizers. Go and have the shrimp and grits, which is the best shrimp and grits I've had anywhere in New England. And there's a certain seafood restaurant that I love, that everyone knows that I love. Their shrimp and grits has nothing on what they're doing at the Porch. Highly, highly, highly recommended. I can't give it enough praise. So go check it out. It is The Porch. You can find them online, theporchsouthern.com. And they're over at Rivers Edge Drive in Medford, Massachusetts. Check them out. Great drinks, great food. Try the shrimp and grits. You will not regret it. And we close, as we do every week, with That's a Thing That Happened. Strangest story from the past week. Texas. Didn't get over to Texas that much. Mom of the year. Police were called to the Trackside nightclub in Clopperas Cove at 1:45 in the morning on a report. 1:45 in the morning. On a report of a child left locked in a car. They found the child. Then they found the mom, 26-year-old Samantha Grace Vaughn, who told police that she only went inside to pee, then confessed to having two shots after going to the club to get her husband. She blew a .08, twice the legal Texas limit, then told police, quote, "You will not take my child and place her with a effing N-word." Vaughn had more to say on her ride to the police station, including, quote, "I hope someone slits your GD jugular and an N-word Fs your children in the A. And I hope someone Fs you, your children in the A, and makes them choke on N-word male members." Obviously, I'm paraphrasing. Vaughn was charged with child endangerment. No word on where her child was placed.
not a good look when you're trying to avoid Department of Family Services, to use a lot of racial epithets and F-words, and...